This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Oh, how you be here on a Thursday? We're just cooking, man. We're cooking with gas.
Cooking with gas.
Team is back out on the practice field. And we got a jam-packed show today as well. We'll get to that in a moment. As the Monday night game is seemingly, Steve, never going to get here. We are already a week removed from the first game. We got another 4 days before the Bills play again.
I'm not going to make it. So I was sitting at the office. Shannon was there, and I said, do you know what this song is?
Our intern, yes.
Our intern. Do you know what this song is? And I played the Monday Night Football theme.
Yes.
She goes, oh, yeah, I know what that is. I said, listen, there's a meme on social media if you go in. If you play the Monday Night Football theme in your house, every male of adult age will come to the room.
Anyone with a Y chromosome.
They'll all come to the room.
It's like moths to a flame.
Exactly. It's like turning on a light in a cave, man. Everybody goes to the light.
You're not wrong.
You turn that thing on, and it is like a magnet. It is like a testosterone magnet. And I mean, it's like, boom. Everybody goes right into the room, and they're like, what is it? What's on? You can't not come into the room. I know I'm the, particularly if you hear your wife in there and she's playing it, you can't not go. It is impossible to say, no, I'm not interested. I was playing the thing. I was playing the Monday night theme in our little office space. I was playing that thing all morning and I had goosebumps the entire time. We were like voicing over Frank Gifford, introing the Bills, hosting the Titans on Monday night. You just can't get enough of it. I cannot get enough of that.
It's a goosebump song.
It is.
Yeah, it's a goosebump song for sure. I don't debate it for a second. There is a wide swath, maybe even like three generations of football fans that know immediately what that is. I remember when ringtones first came out for telephones. I can't tell you how many of my friends had the Monday Night Football theme as their ringtone on their phone.
It's the best. It's the absolute best.
Now, as I understand it, tonight's game, Thursday Night Football, Chargers-Chiefs, which is a hell of a game.
Yeah, that is a good game.
On
Amazon Prime.
Right. It's going to be the first primetime game on Amazon Prime tonight. And there was a whole big marketing thing. They came up with their own theme music for Thursday Night Football on Amazon. I heard the song. It's actually pretty good. It's not Monday Night Football caliber, but it's not bad. I liked it. It made me think of a football game. Like, it sounded like a football game's coming. Do you know what I mean? Like, you got to – no pun intended here, but you really do have to strike the right notes. When you're coming up with a major network football theme song.
Let me tell you something.
You got to nail that.
They think they have all kinds of
focus groups.
They want to get that theme right. Like, because you can – and I was playing all these themes – for Shannon as well. Like, do you know this one? She was like, yeah, that's the NFL on CBS. What about this one? That's the NFL on Fox. What's this one? NBC Football Night in America. What's this one? NFL Network. They all have their themes. And I couldn't sing any of those now. I could sing the CBS one. But I couldn't sing any of, but only the Monday Night Football song is right at the top of my playlist for
right
football.
Right in the front of your cerebral cortex.
That's the number one on
it's
the playlist.
It's embedded there.
Yeah. So
I get it.
And I'm telling you, on Monday, when we come on the show at 1, on game day, that's going to lead the show, that song. Jay, make that happen. Put that on a whiteboard.
Well, I think that can happen. Yeah. We're allowed to do that. Yeah, we did it last year. We'll do it again.
And I want it. Here's what I want. I want the Monday Night Football theme played for the entire two-hour show underneath our voices.
Well,
all 2 hours. I can't get enough.
Really?
All of it.
It's
just like
3 hours, by the way, on Monday.
Oh, that's right. All 3 hours of the show.
You might
the Monday
actually make
theme.
Yourself sick of that song after listening to it on a loop for 3 hours.
I don't know if I can. We might. 3 hours
might be the breaking point.
I'm telling you, though, man, I can't get enough of that thing.
It's a good tune.
Oh,
for sure.
That
As we said, jam-packed show for you today, and it'll begin with a Hall of Famer. We had one Hall of Famer in here on Tuesday in Thurman Thomas. We have another one coming in about, I'd say 15 minutes time or so. Jim Kelly will be joining us here, and for a number of reasons, chief among them, he is the legend of the game for the Monday night matchup with the Titans, week two, home opener, where the place will be in a veritable froth.
Oh, my gosh.
By like 5 p.m., 2 hours before kickoff. Bills just fans are going to be going cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
You guys got to remind the mafia it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah. Pace yourselves.
We're going to need you in the fourth quarter just like they need you in the first quarter, so make sure you're hanging there.
And don't be so out of whack that you can't just be loud and do your job in the first quarter. You know, we need people upright and coherent.
Marv used to say, you know, instead of saying, like, he said, listen, don't be dumb and don't be dirty on the field. He says, let me just make this positive. Play smart, play clean. That's what that's kind of Marvism, right? Instead of saying, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that, say, hey, how about play smart and play clean.
Yeah.
Play smart, play clean. That's what we're asking.
Mafia. Be excited.
Play smart, play clean.
Be at least semi-coherent.
That's right.
That's what we're looking for.
Just, you know, keep.
Because it's not just about being loud. It's about knowing when in the game to be loud. We don't need Josh having a goal like this because people are so amped at the offense.
And you got to have a good time doing it. You're going to want to remember the good times just like we suffered through the bad times.
That's
so, you know, just keep it together. And remember, we're all in it together. Let's go.
Yeah. About 40 minutes from now, we will be joined by ESPN's fantasy guru, Field Yates, who will deliver us his world-class lineup for week two of the fantasy football season. So we look forward to that. Obviously, his appearance is always presented by FanDuel. Make every moment more. So we look forward to that conversation. And we have a number of things to cover with you with regard to the Bills and the NFL at large. We will begin with the Bills practice update, which is presented by LeagueCom, Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine. And the news is not good concerning the Bills' defensive tackle position. During the media viewing portion of practice, both Tim Settle and Ed Oliver were not out there for a second straight day. I believe the first injury report comes out today since the game is Monday night. So the first injury report will be released today as we get the exact nature of the injuries those two gentlemen are dealing with. We know Ed is dealing with an ankle injury. Tim Settle, I can't remember if it's a calf or a hamstring, but we'll see if it's something new or if it's the same injury that he was dealing with in the preseason for a stretch. So we'll get that later this afternoon when the injury report is released. Also, a non-participant in practice today, Dane Jackson. We don't know if it's injury-related or if it's a load management thing. So again, we have to wait for the injury report to be released later this afternoon. So we'll get the 411 on Dane Jackson's situation as well. NFL news and notes as we go around the NFL, presented by Kaleida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. If you think the Bills are a little bit nicked up, have you seen the laundry list for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Steve? They are a banged up bunch. Already without starting left guard and center for the season, their receiving core is a mess as well. Mike Evans, who's dealing with a calf injury, not seen at Bucs practice today. Chris Godwin, as we know, has the hamstring injury, not practicing. And now Julio Jones, with a knee issue, is not practicing. Fortunately for them, wide receiver Russell Gage did return to practice, so they got somebody to run out there. We knew that Steelers pass rusher T.J. Watt was dealing with a pectoral injury. It was a muscle injury. Fortunately, the pectoral tendon that attaches to the bone was not detached, which means he does not need surgery. Instead, he needs rehabilitation. But the Steelers put T.J. Watt on IR today, which means he is going to miss at least the next four games. That cements his lack of availability for the Steelers' Week 5 game against the Bills. He will not play in that game against Buffalo in Week 5. So that is noteworthy. Concerning, I know we're all focused on the Titans right now, but that Week 5 game, October 9th, here at Highmark, no T.J. Watt in that game. So that is a loss for sure. Not all that different from the loss that the Titans are trying to work their way through right now with Harold Landry out for the year with a torn ACL.
Right.
So
yeah, that happens every year, and it seems random, but you know, he was just rushing the passer like you've seen him do 150 times, and he comes up hurt.
Right.
He got by the right tackle, threw him off, jumped at Joe Burrow, tried to grab him, and what he knew too, man.
Right away.
You feel bad for him. You know, it's a little bit, and I don't know.
You see these injuries sometimes with defensive players. They're trying to hang on to a player. Their full body weight's going the other direction, and their arm and their pec muscle just can't handle the weight and the force. Yeah. And it just pops on them. Same thing happens a lot of times, I've seen over the years anyway, with, you know, linebackers and torn labrums in their shoulder. They can just get an arm in the hole, and they try to grab the guy with one arm, and the power and force of the running back coming through pulls that arm in such a way that the labrum comes out. And
well, yeah, your grip is stronger than your labrum.
Yeah.
Basically. And that's something's got to give. It's not going to be your grip. And it happens so fast, you don't get a chance to feel it coming.
Yeah.
You know, so you hang on, it pulls, and it's like, and by the time you let go, it's too late.
Yeah, it's too late.
And, you know, you can tell. I mean, we've all seen, and the illustration I've seen is, don't try this at home, but picture yourself without doing it, hanging out the door of your car, the window of your car, while somebody's driving, you're out the passenger window, and you try and tackle a telephone pole. You know, it's hard to do.
Yeah.
Right? You lose. So that's what these guys do, and we've all seen guys try to arm tackle and stuff, and the guys are just too big and strong. But once again, you know, the non-contact ACLs. You saw Butker, the kicker for the Chiefs, twist his ankle when he plants on a soft surface.
Yeah, his foot,
you know, all these guys, these non-contact injuries. It's amazing to me that they happen now seemingly much more so than they ever did in decades past. And it's crazy when you think about that being possible. But these guys they're heavier than they've ever been. Even the small guys are heavier than they've ever been. Plus, the guys who play, they try to stay as fast as they can while being as heavy as they can be. And sometimes your body gets out of kilter that way. And the reason they want to do that is because the more weight you have, the more punishment you can withstand, the harder you are to move, the more weight and velocity it takes to move you, all of those basic physics stuff. So these players try to play as heavy as they can while playing as fast as they can. Like Matt Milano, he was a safety.
Right.
Now he's a 235 linebacker. Well, that's 20 pounds, 25 pounds that he probably doesn't need if he's just a civilian
an
like
everyday
us,
Joe,
right?
Yeah.
He's so that affects guys. And that's why this injury thing is just – it just seems like somebody's got a blindfold on throwing darts at rosters.
Speaking of injuries, I know fantasy football owners of DeAndre Swift were panicking when he missed practice yesterday with an ankle injury. But Swift has calmed the waters of the fantasy world, Steve. He said he's not at all concerned about missing the Lions' Week 2 game against the Commanders. It seems as though Wednesday's non-participation in practice was more of a rest day for Swift, because he was a monster last week against the Eagles. I mean, that's a good defensive front that Philadelphia has. DeAndre Swift, 175 yards and a touchdown. I mean, that's something else. So, you know, you got that's pretty impressive.
It is.
Against a good defensive front. And that's a guy that the Bills are going to see on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and that's the fun part about every year being different. Some guy on some team, like, oh, look at him.
Well, he was a highly touted running back coming out. I remember that. Kind of had an up-and-down year, had some injuries last year, but – yeah. That's a big boy, and he's loaded for bear, man, and he's ready to roll. So we'll see if he can continue that success this coming week against a Washington Commanders defensive front that has largely underachieved for the better part of the last couple of years. Yeah. We have to take a break here, because when we come back, we're going to be joined by the Hall of Famer, one Jim Kelly, be in studio with us next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Pleased to be joined now by Bills legend and Hall of Fame quarterback Jim Kelly joining the show here in studio. Jim, good to have you. How you been?
I'm doing great. I can't complain. Just had I haven't found out yet. Just got back from New York City yesterday.
Okay.
And I haven't got my reports back yet for my MRI.
Okay.
But I feel great, so I'm looking forward to some positive news, hopefully, this afternoon.
There you go. Yeah, well, good luck. Good. We're hoping for that as well. And you catch up from your jet lag?
Oh, yeah.
You were out west for a while.
Man, I've been on the road for probably the last...
West Coast time.
Probably the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say days. You caught me there.
Oh, boy. Yeah, we were out there for a while. I took my family out after we auctioned off to go Napa Valley in Palo Alto. Like every year he buys it. And so we spent some time. And then right after I flew my family out and had some good time for my wife's birthday.
Nice.
And then we went to L.A. and had some fun in L.A. And unfortunately, the fun's going to stop when I get my credit card coming the end of the month. They went to Rodeo Drive.
Oh,
they went to someplace called Kith, K-I-T-H.
I'm glad I don't know, and my wife doesn't know about that.
No, you don't want to know. Because I walked in, and I looked at some of the price tags. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me?
Wow.
They didn't buy a lot, so I'm good. But it was a great opportunity to spend time with my wife and my kids and my son-in-law.
That's
so it was
awesome.
Fun.
Awesome.
And watching Bills whoop some butt.
That's right.
Yeah,
that was a nice capper on your trip, probably.
Yeah, and looking forward to this Monday. What do you think about this game? We got 4 days before this game happens, and we
seems like forever.
Yeah,
it's like already a week removed from the
Thursday
first
to a Monday night game.
Oh,
it's
big
like,
time.
Man,
some
oh,
good.
Man.
If you had any issues with it, some of your little sore. This is a perfect time. I'd rather have it, you know, halfway through the season. But what a game coming up. I mean, I've already been talking crap to Tim McGraw and Jake Owen, my buddies that are big Titans fans and some other guys. But you know what? I'm pumped about it. I'm looking forward to it. And as a matter of fact, I'm one of the legends of
the
game come Monday night. So
it'll be great.
Hopefully get this crowd rocking and rolling and get them ready for when the big number 17 puts some points on the board, and our defense starts sacking old Tannehill. So I'm ready.
Yeah. So we should mention all of this. So Jim is, as he said, legend of the game, which is presented by the BFLO Store, the official retailer of the Buffalo Bills, and he's going to be making an appearance on Saturday.
Yep.
At the, I think it's the grand opening of the BFLO Store from 1 to 2 p.m. It's the one on Transit Road.
Transit Town Plaza, I think it is, yeah.
That's exactly where it is. And, get down there, say hi to Jim, and pick up some Bills gear game on Monday.
Leave my name on the list for your tailgate, too. I'm going to stop by.
Yeah, you know what? We're going to do that because we're limited in it now. We have to, as you will.
Yeah, he won't let me in.
No.
He hates me.
No. Well, Tasker,
I
know you're messing with me, but the thing is, there's so many people. I go to tailgate. I don't even want to go anymore because I don't know half the people I don't know.
Jim,
we're cutting it off.
Yeah. Your problem is you got too many friends.
Yeah,
that's your problem.
The bottom line is my too many friends bring their friends.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden it goes from 50 people to 100 people. So we're going to limit that this year.
Yeah.
We're going to take so I can enjoy myself a little bit, talk to some of my buddies. And
let me say this.
Yeah, friends three times.
Let me just
removed.
Remind you, nobody cares if you enjoy yourself. You show me a good time.
Don't I always?
Yes, you do.
That's half the problem.
That's why I'm going to stop by.
Tasker, you
created your own monster.
By the way, my whole family's showing up too, so take care of them as well.
You know what? If you're part of my family, that's all it counts.
Right.
And Chris Colton has been bringing us an RV from Colton RV for,
and I got to tell you,
30, 40 years?
Listen, those things are awesome.
Oh, my word.
I'm not an RV guy, at least at this point in my life. But, man, oh, man, there's something about them that you just walk in there. It's just so comfortable. Those things are nice.
Especially
for a tailgate.
And especially come December. When it's cold outside, you're not coming in. I am.
Listen, there's a couple of games last year.
That's when you really got to whittle the list down.
You couldn't build a fire big enough a couple of games last year.
Oh, I get it. But you know what? They've been doing it for me for years and years and years. And I thank the Buffalo Bills for allowing us to be able to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got a nice spot for it, which is nice.
Which is good.
All right, let's talk a little bit University of Miami connection here because one Ken Dorsey is the offensive coordinator, as you know, called a masterful game last week.
Yep.
I know you've had plenty of conversations with him in the time that he's been here. This is now his fourth season on the staff. Was this kind of what you anticipated from him in terms – I mean, it's only one game sample, and I'm sure it'll look a lot different this week again – But I really loved the way he used Reggie Gilliam. Some 21 personnel, moved him around. He was like an H-back sometimes, a fullback. And we had Roger Saffold in here, the left guard, yesterday. And he said, yeah, sometimes Reggie comes into the huddle. He goes, all right, who am I? What am I?
Who are you? What are you doing here?
They're moving around all over the place. But what did you think of that, the way they used Gilliam last week?
I love it. I love how they mix it up because a defense can't just hone in on one particular thing, pretty much like we used to do. I mean, we went pretty much our K-gun offense was our offense, but we bring in different personnel at times. But what Ken Dorsey has done, it doesn't surprise me. The good thing about it, he was in Brian Daboll's offense for a number of years. He got to see all the ones that he likes and the ones he doesn't like and the ones that he wishes he could put in.
Right.
Now he's in charge, and he gets to do what he wants to do. And the best part about it, I remember talking to Josh his first year here. I told him, I said, if there's plays you don't like, you let him know. I said, because you don't want to run something where you don't have confidence in it. And when you get into a game plan, if there's something you really, really like, make sure your coordinator knows about it so he can call in certain crucial situations.
Yeah, that's and there's a lot in that. And this team I saw that I've seen the end of last season and now in the beginning of this season, I saw a video clip online. It was for FINA, one of the plays we had. And I couldn't believe it. You got sacked in the pocket or something in one of the games. The ball pops up. FINA grabs it, runs for a first down. And you think, oh, my gosh, we're coming up. You know, what's going on? And we were running no huddle. And they didn't even have time to talk about it. You were right back at the line of scrimmage, and they were going again.
You
I
mean
was
the
like,
refs didn't have time to talk refs, about it?
The commentators.
Yeah.
They didn't have – nobody had time to do anything. You just got up, ran forward, and everybody just lined up again. You didn't even have a conversation about the crazy play. This team now – is kind of in that spot where they're doing some stuff. You know, they pop off, you know, a 53-yard touchdown. They do this other thing, or Josh takes off and stiff-arms a guy off the field. I am impressed that they just line up. Let's go. Huddle up. Let's go. Here's the play. Let's go. There's no fanfare. There's no fuss, no muss. It's like that no huddle. We're too big a hurry to score. Crazy stuff's happening. This team is playing lights out. They fumble it away. They fumble it away again. Two back-to-back possessions in the first half. Man, they don't care.
No, and that's what the attitude you almost have to have. And with Josh, what he does, getting back into the group, that goes for Ken Dorsey, too, on the sidelines. He gets that play in right away. And I know there's no team that's really done what we've done. I mean, I think we were going like every 15 seconds.
15,
I mean,
16,
like real 15 seconds.
16 seconds.
But you know what? When they throw different personnel groupings at you, and as good as Josh is, as good as the receivers that we have, man, it's a tough thing for a defense to be able to defend against because we got a lot of weapons, and now we have an offense that can do more than just one thing.
Yeah. Because they were breaking the huddle, 23, 22 seconds left on a play clock,
yeah,
which is
even
faster than last year. Because last year they'd get out of the huddle around 17, 18, which is still plenty of time. Week one, it was like 23, 22 seconds. They're coming up to the line already.
Yeah.
And Josh has got all day to check things
with the
out,
rules,
make a check.
Well,
you know?
So does Dorsey. If the rules are that the radio cuts off at
15,
if you're standing there at 22 and you're all lined up, not only does Josh get a look at it, Dorsey and Josh can have a one-sided conversation. Dorsey says, hey, what do you think? And Josh could be, you know, raise his left arm for this, raise his right arm, whatever. They can have kind of this off-the-camera conversation of what they're thinking. They both start saying the same thing, and Dorsey can call a play and Josh says yeah I like that, and then go, so they can have this on the field while the defense is getting set and kind of collaborate every snap, and that's huge.
Can Dorsey have the time to go, get down?
Yeah.
You know that, Josh, get down, slide.
Yeah, see, throw this. Yeah, if this isn't here, throw this away, Josh.
Yeah, please.
But, yeah.
What about the Titans, Jim? Because we heard Josh yesterday in talking about last year's game, you know, that he slips on the goal line, fourth down play, and they don't win the game. They lose 34-31. But he said, in reviewing that performance, he said a lot of times his eyes were in the wrong place. Titans are very good at disguising. Those safeties spin a lot. Can you just maybe explain to the listeners, when you hear a quarterback say his eyes are in the wrong place, what he's talking about?
Well, it was brought up this morning on my radio show on 97 Rock, and the thing is, I got used to – And I'm sure they get a little better nowadays, but looking at the corners, and Steve knows this too, is a lot of times when a corner is covering a wide receiver and he's up on him tight, the majority of people out there that don't know it, they don't know that if the corner's staring at him, I mean, like glued on him, it's usually going to be man. But if the corner's glued on him, but he keeps peeking in, he's waiting for that snap count to press and bail. A lot of times that happens, that they try to, you know, fake the you know, whether it's the receiver or the quarterback. You need to know that there's certain things that you look for watching film. If a defensive back keeps peeking in, he's probably going to press bail and might be zone coverage. Most of the time, if he's locked on you and he don't look in, he's number one right on that wide receiver, it's probably going to be man coverage. And that's something that a quarterback looks for when you're watching film. And I'm sure Ken Dorsey has taught, you know, Josh that, but there are times where you want to look away from where you're going to run. And as a quarterback, when you're audible and you're doing a run play, you want to find out where the linebacker is. You want to know if it's an over or under. And then by watching film, you know if a defense shifts after a certain part of a team coming up to the line of scrimmage. Back when we played, they didn't have time to do a lot of shifting because we didn't know how to offense. So what we saw was what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And unless they were trying to do something that they weren't comfortable doing, then we would catch them.
Yeah, that was – it's hard to compare anybody to that team that we were throwing out there back in the 90s because you had – a Hall of Fame quarterback, a Hall of Fame running back, and two Hall of Fame wide receivers, and a Hall of Fame caliber two or three offensive linemen at any given time.
And Hall.
It's hard to match up with that group, right? So now, you know, every team's got really good players, and they're able to rotate in. And it's more about sifting through and finding the matchup that works for the Bills now, and then exploiting it if you can, because a team will know what you're doing and they'll take it away from you.
But the interesting thing here, Jim, is this is the fifth time in 5 years that the Bills have played the Titans. I mean, I know they're in the same conference, but they're not in the same division. They play them 5 years in a row now. Last year, they go with a coverage-based scheme. They only rushed Josh with five or more, four snaps the whole game. They played coverage. Because these two teams know each other so well, do you think they switch that up completely, or do they stick to that because it worked? I mean, they gave up 31 points. It's not like Josh didn't move the ball on them.
No, I get it. I think you do what you feel most comfortable with, whether it's what you did before or not. What surprised me a little bit, I heard, I think it was Patrick Mahomes talking about when he was played when he had Hill and Kelsey. He said most of the time I would just look and see who was covering them. And if I knew I was confident that he could beat him, I wouldn't even read the coverage. I would just be going to one or the other. And now he said he has to start learning how to read coverages now. And that kind of surprised me that he said that. But the thing is, with Josh, I think he's in a situation right now, he really feels comfortable with what the offense he's running. Plus, he feels just as comfortable with his receivers out there.
Yeah,
there's one or two that might, you know, surprise a lot of people, but watching him in practice, it's amazing. He's got some weapons. Yeah, and it's I mean, people were talking about he's going to be breaking your records. I go, shoot, halfway through his career, he's going to break all my records. I'm not going to have any left, but I don't care. The only record I want him to beat is that one. And I didn't
the 0-4
one.
Record, right?
I'd like to see 4 in a row, but I'd like to have a couple wins in there.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
You're right. And it's the way these teams are faceted again, the way the rules are now, it's about, you know, matchups, changing people in and out.
Yep.
The offenses are much more fluid and able to, diversify. And like, they don't just run the ball. They run a certain style of running, like the zone read or the pin and pull kind of power offense. Or they run, the old power tray kind of stuff. Or they throw it, and it's either, you know, ball control, deep passing, vertical passing. There's all kinds of styles guys run. And what they do year to year, talking about the Tennessee coming into this game, what they're going to do, depends on their new guys, what they allow them to do differently.
Yeah, and there's no doubt. I think, you know, the whole thing is they're going to do right now because they're not going to have to be able to do too much defensively different because the crowd noise is going to be so loud at times.
Yeah.
Offensively, I know offensively the crowd noise is a big advantage for the Buffalo Bills here. But I think even so, they're not going to be able to do what they want to do offensively and defensively. I think once we get in a groove, boy, I'll tell you what, I'm so pumped up about this offense.
So let me ask you this, too, because the Titans obviously are a much different offense this year in terms of their personnel. Julio Jones is gone. He's in Tampa Bay. They traded A.J. Brown to Philadelphia. Those are two big dudes that are a handful. Now it's Robert Woods and basically two rookies are their top three receivers, the Kyle Phillips kid from UCLA, who's kind of their main slot guy, and Treylon Burks, who's got some size but is kind of slow on the uptake here from all accounts. How challenging is that for Tannehill? He's relying on three brand-new guys. This is his second game in the regular season. He's playing with those dudes. How big a hill is that to climb?
Derrick Henry. No, I mean, that's what he's going to have to really think about, getting that running game going, because you have to, especially when you're an opponent coming into a place like we have right here with the fans, the way they are and how loud they're going to be, he needs to get that running game going in order to open up the passing game, because if we stop that run complete, that's what we want to do. We want to force them into throwing the ball all the time. You just went through the receivers that they have. It's not like, it's unbelievable. And, yeah, they probably work together, but not quite as much as they probably would like. But overall, this is one where it's one of those ones where you look and say, it's a must win, because we should win and we better win.
All right, last one from me. We saw Josh, and it was, they're up 21 points in the second half. And eventually, and when do you think it will, or what will make it happen, that Josh kind of has to change the way he plays late in game? I know he was loving life, tucking the ball under his arm this last week, stiff-arming guys off the field. But he runs the ball probably a little too much for Bills fans' comfort. I know, they'd love to be able to score 35 points.
There's only three design runs. The other seven were him just trying to make something happen.
So is he eventually going to have to change that or not?
I hope it's not learning the hard way. I mean, none of us want to do that. He's got to. He's got to learn. He's got to slide. There's no doubt about it. Get out of bounds, slide. Unless, of course, it's fourth down and you need that 1 or 2 yards, or it's fourth in the fourth quarter, you need that couple extra yards. I get that. But the bottom line, save your body. We need you out there. We don't need you, out 2-3 games or getting a major injury. He's got to understand it's just not his body. It's his whole team. Because they live on how he plays. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, really, the reality of it is this offense is geared because Josh Allen's a quarterback, and he makes things happen. Yes, it's exciting. He's young. Yes, he's young. But get down.
Well, he even said last year, he said at the end of last year, he was so beat up that he said for the first time ever in an NFL offseason, he did almost nothing, because his body needed that time to recover. So when he came back for training camp, he said it's the best he's felt in 2 or 3 years. Well, it's because of stuff like this over the course of 17 games as to why he feels that way. So maybe if he does just a little less, he might feel a whole lot better come week 15, 16, 17. So hopefully, you're trying to get over the goal line, that's one thing. But when you're trying to get 3 extra yards on 2nd and 7, just go to 3rd down. It's okay.
And when you know that, and he knows that, but you get in the flow of a game, you're all excited, you're pumped up, and those things happen. But at the back of his mind, he's got to understand when he takes off running with it, know the part of the game that you're in, slide, get down, run out of bounds. Yeah. And if you have to, it better be a crucial down or a crucial part of the game if he's going for that, my head down and try and run somebody over.
We always said, too, it's a little bit like when you – Not that I recommend this, but you walk away from a car wreck without a scratch and kind of laugh about it. That's what it is when you leave an NFL game after you've been through that and got hit and all
pretty
that.
Pretty dang fortunate.
You feel like, you feel lucky to get out of there without a scratch.
Blessed.
And it doesn't happen a lot. So none of these guys feel 100% after one game, because it's that physical. So I think that's the way we all kind of feel about Josh running the football. It's great as long as he's lining up next week.
And the thing is, he's not used to getting hit either. I mean, it's different when you're doing it every day in practice, like linemen, linebackers and that. But when you're not used to getting hit at all, you're going to be sore after a game, no matter if you get hit a couple times or 10 times. Right. You just have to know you want to make sure you're there for the following week.
Well, Jim, great to see you. We hope the news back from New York is all positive for you. We wish you well on that, and we look forward to seeing you down there at Legend of the Game on Monday night. Get them amped up, all right?
I'm ready. I'm pumped, and I'll see you at the tailgate, right, Chef? Love you, man.
Put
love you guys.
And don't forget, Jim will be
25 guests.
Jim will be at the BFLO store in the Transit Town Plaza, and he'll be there from 1 to 2 p.m. on Saturday at the store's grand opening. So be sure to get down there, say hi to Jim, awesome. Pick up some Bills gear for the Monday night game. We will take a break here. When we come back, we'll have ESPN fantasy guru Field Yates with his week 2 lineup. You don't want to miss it. That's coming up next here on One Bills Live. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here on a Thursday as we still sit 4 days away from Buffalo's Monday night tilt with the Titans in week 2. But pleased to be joined now by ESPN NFL insider, fantasy football analyst Field Yates, making his weekly appearance on the show. And his ultimate fantasy lineup is presented by FanDuel. Make every moment more. How you doing, Field?
Gentlemen, I am doing well. I'm doing impatiently, if that's a word. I just made that up. I am doing impatiently. I am impatient right now because before we got going, I said to the two of you that if I were commissioner for a day, one of the provisions that I would write into the NFL schedule is that teams that play on a Thursday game cannot play Monday in the week after. That's too long of a break. It's just like how I feel that if you're coming off of your bye, you cannot play Thursday or Monday. You come off of your bye and you play on Sunday. It's the appropriate amount of rest that players deserve. I wish the Bills were playing yesterday, but at least Sunday. Monday is too long of a wait for me.
Do you think it's because it's a greater advantage because of the rest or a detriment to the team itself?
You know, I'd say this early on in the season, I'm not particularly concerned about the rest for the Bills. This is a team that did play some of its starters during the preseason a little bit, but for the most part, and not totally unscathed, Tre'Davious White certainly on PUP, and then Dane Jackson currently dealing with an injury. Like, it's not as if this team is 100% health, but they've largely remained unscathed. And I would say that we 1 week in, like, you know, some of the starters weren't even playing by the end of that game last Thursday night, at least for the final few snaps. So not too concerned about the rest for the Bills. I just am anxious. I want to see the team again.
Yeah, no question. Let's get to the ultimate fantasy lineup, though, here, Field. And I don't know if I've ever asked you this. I realize that you have your formula for picking players here in terms of salary and projected points and the math that you do there. How much do you factor in opponent, especially an opponent that didn't do all that well defensively last week, especially with your quarterback pick here?
Yeah, Brownie, it's a driving force. It perhaps is one of the top decisions that are one of the top factors that goes into a decision for a daily fantasy lineup. So let's dive right into it. Derek Carr is my quarterback. I'm going to stack him, and I'll talk about the receiver I will stack him with in just a little bit. But Derek Carr in week one threw the ball a ton, didn't throw the ball particularly effectively against the Chargers, who really ate up that Las Vegas offensive line. Khalil Mack had 3 sacks for the Chargers in his debut. But against an Arizona team that, as you guys saw last Sunday, was no match whatsoever for the Chiefs. We'll see whether J.J. Watt plays. That'll certainly help them a little bit. But they're thin at cornerback. They're inexperienced at cornerback. I don't think their pass rush is particularly imposing. I think that the Raiders' offensive line holds up better and that Carr performs more capably this week as well.
And when you get to the running back position, this strikes me, this position is kind of the one that is more up and down and inconsistent in its production. How, you know, give us some insight as to how you get around that.
So you're looking for a couple of factors here. The matchup that I just mentioned, the price point as we've been talking about, and then also the players and the ability and how they were used in week one. Antonio Gibson played really well for the Commanders in week one. Brian Robinson remains on the non-football injury list, which means that Gibson, who had 22 opportunities, I consider that a combination of rushes plus targets. And this is a sort of deep dive equation, but a target can be worth dramatically more in PPR scoring, which is not what FanDuel is. It can be worth 2.5 times as much as a rush can be, just because players catching the football tends to lead to bigger gains. So Antonio Gibson in a good matchup against the Lions for the Commanders is my first running back. And then you move forward to my second running back. And one of the other tricks for daily fantasy is taking advantage of a bit of a Monday night discount, because the Broncos played on Monday night, as we all know. Prices are set earlier on in the day. So when you're making your lineups, if a guy plays really well on Monday night like Javonte Williams did, you're getting a bit of a discount because he was priced before we saw him have 11 catches. $7,300 is a salary for Javonte Williams. And separate and apart from the catches, guys, I know the Broncos looked bad on Monday night in certain moments. They had two fumbles at the one, and they had the massive clock management gaffe at the end of the game. But that game could have been a lot different if they just convert those 2 1-yard touchdown runs. They play at home this week. They should be a little bit ticked off after how they finished last Monday. And they play against the Texans. They're currently 9.5-point favorites. I do think that Javonte Williams has a better day where he pays off.
All right, receiver time now. And this is where you double dipped, right?
That's right. You got to double dip, and you mentioned the stack. So that's Davante Adams. And, you know, one of the stories this offseason at $8,800, by the way, for Davante Adams is, all right, so he goes to Las Vegas where there's Darren Waller and Hunter Renfrow. There's no way Davante Adams is going to be nearly the player he was in terms of volume in Green Bay, where last year he had over 1,000 receiving yards more than the next highest player on the Green Bay Packers roster. But what happened in week one? He had 17 targets. That was tied for the most, third most in his career. And Davante Adams has been around for a while. The Raiders kept looking for him early and often. He had a target share of 48.6%, which means of all the attempts that Derek Carr threw last Sunday, 48.6 of them went towards Davante Adams. That college chemistry is real. And the matchup is just so good. I mean, the Chiefs tore that pass defense apart for the Cardinals, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Raiders do the same thing.
And then you go to another player who Carolina – I mean, I'm surprised that Carolina has any fantasy team players that are going to expand maybe
McCaffrey.
Christian McCaffrey, but this is not Christian McCaffrey, DJ Moore. Tell us about the reasoning.
Well, here's the reason why is, you know, what we try to do like in the stock market, Steve, you kind of got to diversify the portfolio. And in some cases, that means you're buying low, right? And DJ Moore is a buy low candidate this week. DJ Moore is a really, really good player. The guy makes nearly $20 million per year on that extension he signed earlier this offseason. And I thought he deserved every penny of it. The Panthers were not great in week one, but DJ Moore played every single snap for the Carolina Panthers. He was on the field. He's running routes on every pass play as well. They just didn't find him the football. Didn't give him the football nearly enough. He had 6 targets total, which is not a great number. You want that number to be closer to 10 for DJ Moore. You're getting him at a massive discount, though. Normally, he's not going to be available for $6,200. I think he's too good of a player to be priced at this number after just one down week. So DJ Moore slots in as my wide receiver, too. And I think Carolina looks a little better on Sunday. I'm not saying they're going to be the Bills offensively, but they should be a little bit better.
Michael Pittman had a nice week one. So I see I understand why he's here because he's, you know, he's playing against the Jacksonville defense. Yes, they got some pass rushers that might be able to get to a pocket quarterback like Matt Ryan, but he's going to get his targets. This is like, would you call this your safe play in your wide receiving core?
Yeah, I mean, really, Adams might qualify as that as
well,
Brownie. But both of those guys are high floor, just rock solid players, high ceiling as well. Michael Pittman looked like the player that we hoped he was going to be coming out of USC. He showed a lot more of that last season. I mean, even as a rookie, you guys can recall when he played in the playoff game against the Bills. He was solid in that game as well. So there have been plenty of signs that a consistent star season was coming for Michael Pittman. Look good in week one. Expect more of the same in week two, priced at $7,800. And as we all know, one of the issues with Carson Wentz is that his accuracy was not on point much last year. Well, Matt Ryan was top 5 in week one in terms of on-target percentage of throws. So Matt Ryan's going to put the ball where he needs to put it when he's got time and space. That Colts offensive line, I think, will hold up well enough against Jacksonville to do exactly that.
Yeah, and then you kind of go with Jacksonville, Evan Ingram, the tight end. Is this a price move here with 4,900, or do you really like the matchup?
Yeah, I think more about the price than the matchup, Steve. And I think that one of the big things, and I'll remind the audience again this year, I've talked about it in years past in this segment, is that at tight end, you kind of either pay the Tiffany pricing for Travis Kelce or Mark Andrews, or Darren Waller, or you pay the bargain bin. And the bargain bin is where I think I'm shopping this week at tight end for Evan Engram, because while he wasn't a star last week, he saw enough volume, and the Jacksonville offense threw the ball a ton. Now, that defense might be a little bit improved, but not enough that I think they're going to be able to play a lot of games where they win 21-13 or 22-19, something like that. We're going to have to throw it a bunch. But I think Evan Engram, based off of the usage last week and the price this week, is a reasonable value.
Your flex is, you know, you're kind of, well, you might have more inside information than most, because people are wondering, with Elijah Mitchell now gone, who picks up the torch there in that committee backfield in San Fran and gets the volume. Most people think it's going to be a hot hand situation with Kyle Shanahan calling the shots, but you're putting your money on Jeff Wilson this week.
I am. And again, FanDuel scoring, no PPR, so you don't have to worry about catches here. And that's important, because last year he did not get nearly enough targets in the passing game. Jeff Wilson had 8 total targets last season in 6 games played. This year, this week specifically, I think he's going to end up being the lead back for the 49ers. And we've seen him get 15, 20 carries in a game before. Jeff Wilson's a good player. You know, as we all know, running backs probably the easiest position to find guys off the scrap heap and turn them into really, really good players, right? We see that all the time in the NFL. That being said, the 49ers have had a lot of injuries recently, which is why Jeff Wilson now at the top of the depth chart. We'll see Deebo Samuel as a runner. Trey Lance will run some. It's a big opportunity, though, for Jeff Wilson and for this 49ers team, guys, because if the 49ers don't win on Sunday, I know this show is about the Buffalo Bills, but at some point on Monday, other than when you're previewing the Titans game, you guys are going to be asking this question. If the 49ers are 0-2, does Jimmy Garoppolo need to be the starting quarterback? I think the 49ers respond. They play Seattle on Sunday in San Francisco.
And then finally, to end it up, you're using the Dak Prescott injury really to pick your defensive matchup for this week?
That's all it is. And yeah, since he's got a solid defense, you know, there's some playmakers at all three levels. Pass rush is good. Trey Hendrickson's a really good player up front. Seems to get sacks all the time. Playmakers in the secondary, Jesse Bates, probably the most reliable of them. Their free safety, they were not good last week at all, but they were put in a lot of bad spots. You know, when your own team turns the football over 5 times, it's going to lead to some short fields. So the fantasy points we saw last week for the Bengals, not indicative of how I thought they played overall. They actually kind of kept the team in the game last week. So I think they bounced back. And not only is Dak Prescott out, but that Cowboys offense looked terrible on Sunday night. Really looked like it was struggling to find a rhythm. The offensive line looks like an offensive line that's dealt with injuries and attrition this offseason. So could be a tough few weeks ahead for the Cowboys. And as we know, in Dallas, pressure cooker. There's always a pressure cooker down there in Dallas.
Yes. Should be a nice bounce back week for Cincinnati, though. They should win that game.
Leaves you $100 in your salary cap.
Good what are you stuff. Doing?
I'm going to put that in the I'm going to put that in the One Bills Live tip jar.
There you go.
All right.
Appreciate you. Yep.
I would have been happy if you just got a couple of tacos for us.
Yes, not required, but very much appreciated.
Yeah. All right, Field. Thanks very much. Good luck with this lineup. I'm sure it'll do well. Especially those receivers are killer, man. Yeah. Nice job, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Guys, looking forward to it already.
Thanks,
all right,
Field.
Take care. That's the Ultimate Fantasy Lineup with Field Yates, presented by FanDuel. Make every moment more.
I don't know what it takes to get defensive points, but the Cowboys couldn't score points with Dak Prescott, and now without him against Cincinnati's defense.
Yeah.
They may pitch a goose egg.
You think they may get shut out?
Ooh. Yeah, unless Joe Burrow hangs on to the ball a little bit more and then he throws an interception. I see a defensive score for Dallas, but their offense? I mean, I like Cooper Rush as much
their
as the
offense?
Next guy.
Question mark?
But, you know, it might get, you know, if they turn it over in their own end and give up a field goal because of it.
It's not good. We're going to step aside here to take a break, but when we come back, we're taking your phone calls. Which Bills player do you think is going to go off against the Titans on Monday Night Football? Give us your choice at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, or on the tweet sheet. Your phone calls, second hour. Coming up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. We'll be right back.
on Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, hour number two here on a Thursday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live. This week's game sponsor, Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Western New York, the official health plan of the Buffalo Bills. Talking with you here in hour number two at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. We are wide open for your input as we are asking you here, 4 days removed from the Monday night week two matchup with the Titans, which Bills player is going to go off on the Titans Monday night? You let us know at 803-0550. I got an open line for you there, so be sure to chime in if you have somebody in mind that you think is just going to tear it up in Monday night's game. And we go to the phones, and leading us off is DJ in Connecticut. What do you got for us, DJ?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Listen, thank you very much for taking my call. I'm a little concerned. I actually went to the game in L.A., and it was a great atmosphere. And even though the colors were the same, so you really couldn't tell how many Bills fans versus Ram fans, but I would say it was at least 50-50. And as you guys pointed out in your show last week, they had to go to silent count at home, which is always a great thing for the traveling Bills Mafia.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm a little concerned about over-optimism, I think. You know, whatever happened to humble and hungry, I kind of want to pump the brakes on, you know, we're going to the Super Bowl, we're going to win, and we're favored and all this sort of stuff. And I think about I went to 3 of the 4 Super Bowls in Steve's era, and I think about how miserable I was the 91 season. And I was living in San Francisco, and I was the reason I was miserable because I was expecting a win. And if the Bills didn't, you know, if the offense didn't score, you know, 4 or 5 touchdowns, the defense didn't dominate, then I was unhappy. And I kind of changed everything the next year in the 02 and 03 seasons. And I just was kind of like, you know what, if they win, that's great. Let's celebrate the wins. And I'm going to do the same this year because the last thing you want to do is be miserable if your team wins and you're miserable because they didn't win by enough or, you know, they didn't do X, Y, and Z. So I don't know. I wish some Bills fans would go back to humble and hungry. But I think Gabe Davis is going to have a breakout game against Tennessee. And I was wondering, you guys, do you think the Bills will utilize any 3 linebacker sets against Henry and the running game?
Well, I mean, and thanks for the call, DJ. I appreciate it. I think it's a possibility, but if you want to use last year's game as a gauge, it's not very often that they take Taron Johnson off the field in favor of a linebacker. Last year's game against Tennessee, when, you know, they ran the ball as much as they did, A.J. Klein, who was the 3rd linebacker coming on the field last year, he played 3 snaps. Taron Johnson played 50 of the 53 defensive snaps in that game. So if we're using that as a gauge, you may see Tyrell Dotson on the field a little bit, or maybe if they're struggling, maybe they go bigger body, but it's not going to happen all that often. I don't know.
I don't know this without checking it, but it's my guess. A.J. Klein was on a 4th-and-1 or a 3rd-and-1, and they were matching personnel.
Goal line,
that kind of stuff. That's with the 3 snaps he got. It is hard to get the Bills out of their nickel defense, and I get it. You think a bigger body, more guys around the line of scrimmage will dissuade them from running or at least stop them when they hand it to Henry. They did. Don't forget, if you look at that game and break it down, Henry snaps off a 76-yard touchdown run. Without that run, they do the job.
Right.
So,
but that one was costly.
Yes, but every play is costly. There's nothing that says you can't snap it off if you have 3 linebackers in there too, and it doesn't make it any less likely. Because all it takes is one guy to step to the wrong place. So they're not afraid of, Derrick Henry physically. What they're afraid of is having him just break a tackle or having somebody miss their assignment, and he goes the distance like he does here in this highlight they're rolling.
Yeah, that's a 76-yarder last year.
You take, you know, you got to play every down. You can't just play part of the down. So it's not like the Bills don't think they could have stopped the run well enough to win the game last year. They did, besides the one play. So that's the mentality. They don't have to break. It's not broken, but that one play, somebody missed it.
Yeah, and the other problem is when they get in the red zone, Derrick Henry is every bit as big a red zone threat as Josh Allen is with the ball in his hands.
Right.
You get down the red zone with that Titans team defensively, you got problems.
Yeah.
Because it's very hard to hold him to no gain, tackle for loss. That usually doesn't happen, and it's a big reason why his two other touchdowns in that win for Tennessee last year came in the red zone. Yeah, he had the 76-yarder, but he pounded it in for the other two touchdowns. And when they get in the red zone, much like the Bills rely on Josh down there, they give it to 22, and he usually doesn't disappoint.
Yeah, it's a lot of weight to stop. And I get it. Bigger guys mean more physicality up front, and it's basic math. But the Bills, like, there have been teams, and I talked to Leslie Frazier about this in the offseason. What do teams do to try and pry you out of your nickel defense?
Yeah.
He goes, he laughed. He goes, yeah, they try. He goes, but we don't do it. He goes, and a lot of coaches in the offseason come up to him, and all these coaches and all the guys he rubs up against, they all go, how's come you don't switch people?
Well, let's think about this for a second with respect to the matchup, Steve, because as we know, Tennessee's top three receivers are all new. Two draft choices and Robert Woods. Do they go 11 personnel as much? Because if they don't, that might be the one reason you do come out of nickel package and go three linebackers.
Well, Robert
Woods, if they're going to go, you know, two tight ends or something like that, take Taron off the field, put Tyrell on.
Yeah, Robert Woods is a good receiver, but he plays out of the slot. If you're going to do that, put your best slot guy on him, and then, you know, you can take one of the outside corners off. I don't know if you do that or not. But, yeah, if they start coming out there with two backs and a tight end.
Yeah, 21 or 12.
21 or 22.
yeah.
You know, what are you going to do? Particularly if it's 22 personnel on a first and 10, two tight ends and two backs.
I mean, their tight ends are mainly blocking backs, Jeff Swain and –
Right. So if they come out there, two running backs and two tight ends, yeah, okay, maybe, you know.
Yeah. That might convince me to get out of nickel.
If they're successful doing it.
Yeah.
You're going to try it. You'll say, okay, let's go. Let's see what you can do. Because the Bills aren't the same defense they were a year ago.
Right. Let's go back to the phones. We go to Dave in Florida next. Dave, what do you got for us? You're on One Bills Live.
How you guys doing today?
Good.
Doing well.
All right, great. Listen, I was talking about the defensive. How is Oliver doing?
Not practicing again today, and neither is Tim Settle. We'll get an injury report later this afternoon to find out what the deal is.
All right. Well, if Oliver's back in there and we have Phillips, I think we put a third linebacker in, and they're going to have to rely on Tannehill, who I think is a suck. I don't like Tannehill. So I think we could stop Derrick Henry. I really believe that.
Are you concerned? What if Oliver or Settle can't go? Are you concerned about depth there a little bit?
Yes.
Yeah. It will be a concern, especially if they don't have both of those guys. Because then you're down to Jordan Phillips and Daquan Jones, who are good run stuffers. But we know the rotation that they have, and you probably have to have a practice squad call up like Brandon Bryant, who played two games for the Bills last year in spot duty and did pretty well. He had a fantastic training camp in preseason, not for nothing. I remember Leslie Frazier talking about how Brandon Bryant has really become a thinking man's defensive tackle. Instead of just going on sheer athletic ability, he's recognizing down and distance. I remember in one preseason game this summer, Steve, they even kicked him out to end. You're not putting him out there at end unless he knows everything about the defensive line play concept.
I think they really trust him to do a lot of things. And he and they gave him – they put him – when they do that in the preseason, they're giving the guy a chance to make the team, you know, to move it – you know, position flexibility as a backup kind of guy. Yeah. I would probably lean towards them activating Shaq Lawson before Brandon Brown, even though it's a different position. But I don't know.
I think you got to – if you're down both of those guys, you got to bring at least one up.
Absolutely.
Least one.
Absolutely.
So maybe it's Shaq and Brandon Bryant if they're both down. If one's down, man, I still think it's Brandon Bryant. I think they want to be sturdy in that interior there and work to spill stuff, you know. Get him running east-west a little bit, not north-south. Because once he has a head of steam and he's going north-south, that's when it's a problem.
Right.
It's a big problem. Back to the phones and to Elton in Rochester. What do you got for us, Elton?
How you doing, guys? I'm happy you guys took my call. I have a question. I was listening to you, Brownie, last week, I think it was. You said that Josh was like a ninja when he was out there in the field.
Yeah, I called him an ass-kicking ninja.
Yeah. My question is, we have to come up for we need a nickname for Josh. I haven't heard a good nickname for the guy, man, because he's special, and we need to come up with a great nickname for this guy.
All right. Well, I'm going to entrust Bills Mafia to come up with something clever there, certainly more clever than I did, but that's what he looks like out there to me. He looks like a ninja. I can't I don't – you know, people have said, you know, he's a unicorn because he's such a unique talent. He's like one of a kind, so you call him a unicorn. I don't think that does him justice. There was another name that somebody called him. I can't remember either.
Yeah.
You know, you can call him Big Country if you want. You know, grew up on a farm, call him Big Country.
We were laughing. The tweet that Mina Kimes of NFL Network came out, she's a fantasy girl and an analytics expert. She said it seems unfair that Buffalo has an actual Buffalo playing quarterback.
Yeah.
That's what he looks like. I mean, he is a big, strong dude back there. Yeah, I don't know. The nicknames seem to happen, and I'm sure the guys in the locker room probably have a couple of different nicknames for him. I mean, you can't –
oh, yeah.
Right? And when those – when if one of those or two of those are made public, you can bet they'll catch on pretty quick.
Yes. Let's go to Tom on the west side next. What do you got for us, Tom?
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen.
How we doing?
We're doing okay. I would maybe call him Farmer then. I used to have an uncle called Farmer.
Oh, Farmer, yeah.
Yeah.
Farmer Josh?
Yeah.
Well, just Farmer.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay. What else you got?
Anyway, I was thinking, everybody thinks the Bills are going to gun and shoot. So what I think they're going to – and last week they dinked and dunked. So I think they're going to come out. It's not going to be one player. It's going to be the running backs as a committee. And they're just going to run the ball on them, make Tennessee stack the box. And then once they come up and stack the box again like L.A. Rams did last week, then they're going to gun and shoot and open up everything for the wide receivers.
All right.
What say you guys?
That's an interesting game plan, Tom. Appreciate it. Yeah, I don't know. It's all about matchups. It was for Brian Daboll. I know Ken Dorsey gravitates to the matchups. It's a matchup game. And I think last week the Titans got their doors blown off by the Giants' offensive line, and we had ESPN – NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky on the other day, and he crunches the film as much as anybody, and he said their stats department at ESPN deduced that Saquon Barkley got 138 of his 168 rushing yards without being touched by a defender. I mean, the offensive line for the Giants manhandled the Titans. Does that convince the Bills that they can do the same? You got to believe the Titans are trying to correct all that stuff this week, right, Steve? So
yeah.
Is that the way you go, or do you take advantage of the young corners? I mean, each of the last three drafts, the Titans have drafted a corner in the first or second round, and all of them are playing. It's their top three cover guys. Do you like your matchups there better? you know, that's the equation you're trying to weigh out here and guess as to what the Bills will do offensively.
What usually happens is this: if a team like the Giants, you know, manhandles a team or has a really good day against a team like Tennessee, in whatever phase you're talking about, offensive line play as opposed to defensive line play, if they have a really good day, there's no doubt that the next team they play is going to see if they've fixed it.
Right. Test them.
You're going to test it. And you're going to test it in a way that suits your offense, not the Giants' offense. You're not going to copy the Giants' offense. You're going to run your best plays against the same guys that the Giants had their best day against. So it doesn't mean you have to copy the Giants' plays, but that philosophy, yes, you run your running plays at those guys, see if they can hold up. Then you've got plan B, and then you've got plan C as well. You've got to stay on your toes. So if they do, if there is a way that the Tennessee Titans all of a sudden, because of a couple of missteps, play their scheme better than they did against the Giants, and it wasn't a physical beating, it was a mental mistakes by the Tennessee Titans, then you find that out pretty quick, and they fix that. That can be fixed. You got to have something to go to. That's just the way it works. And between every series, the Bills will come over and evaluate. And as we talked about what happened in the L.A. Rams game for the Bills, Ken Dorsey's in real time is in Josh's head looking at the defense if they get out of the huddle fast enough. That's the way these guys work it. So, yeah, it's easy to sit here 4 days before the game and pick out a game plan that would absolutely work. First graders can do that. You can drop the most impossible play ever, and if you execute it right, it's going to work because that's what it's designed to do.
Yeah.
The problem is you're not playing against kindergartners.
But the point is, when a team shows a deficiency to the degree that the Titans did, it behooves the next opponent to test it to see if it's been fixed. Because if it hasn't, you may have similar success. I mean,
or even more
the
so.
Titans are last in the league in run defense because of the way they performed last week.
Right.
That's right. Something you explore at least, right?
You give it a chance, no question. And, you know, you'll be able to tell, too. Last week they had Moss, Singletary, and Cook up. What if they have Moss, Singletary, Cook, and Duke Johnson? Or Blackshear,
or
one of the guys
off
the practice squads. Then that tips you off.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to do that. But, yeah, I get what you're saying. Let's go back to the phones. We go to Gary in Lancaster next. What do you got for us, Gary?
Yeah, I'm thinking Devin Singletary, just because of what we've been talking about, is he will come out, and we have to establish that he can run. Then the play action becomes – everything hinges on that. Now they have to cover the run, which they have to do because they kind of crapped out last week. Mm-hmm. And then everything else opens up. So I think if we can run Singletary between the tackles and a couple outside plays, they will bring people up, and then it'll open up everything else.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean, I got to believe that the Titans are going to be motivated to look better against the run than they did last week because they were awful. I mean, they were just getting gashed in the run game. I mean, it was bad. It was really bad.
Yeah, Saquon Barkley.
Last in the league bad.
Well, I'll say this. It was so bad, everybody said that Saquon Barkley is now the back that they thought he would always be after that game. That's how bad it was.
Yeah.
You've resurrected a guy's career with that game.
Yeah, it was ugly.
That's ugly.
Poor tackling, no, very little gap integrity. They looked really poor. Now – as we said, they're probably correcting a lot of those things through the course of the practice week. But, yeah, it behooves the Bills to at least test it to see if they've got it fixed. 803-0550, the number to get on board. Who do you think is going to go off on Monday night against the Titans on this Bills roster? We go to Connor in Erie next. What you got for us, Connor?
Hi, fellas. I noticed Ed Oliver didn't practice last week. I mean, yesterday, I believe it was, due to an ankle injury. I didn't know if you guys think he will play. Personally, I don't think he should play because of the depth that we have at every position. I also expect Shaq to get in inside a couple reps in there and on the outside. I'll hang up and hear what you guys have to say. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, Ed did not practice again today. At least he wasn't out there during the media viewing portion of practice.
4 days away.
But we're still 4 days away. There's time. You know, he sustained the injury in the game, which was a week ago. By the time you get to Sunday, you're already at 10 days. So, you know, the question becomes more, how much does he need to practice to convince, you know, Coach McDermott, yeah, I can play him. Does he need reps in practice? You know, all of that stuff. We'll see. I mean, he's not a rookie. He's, you know,
there's a lot we don't know. If he's healthy, he'd play. If they let him. If he hasn't practiced for 11 days, there's a chance that they must say, listen, our depth is going to take care of this. You're going to get healthy, and you can play the next game.
Right,
and they'll use that, because they use that as a reward for Shaq Lawson, as a reward for Brandon Bryant. Those guys are in there working hard, trying to get ready, thinking they might play, and they're playing well and hard. Yeah, okay, you get it. You know, Ed's not quite ready. You are. Let's see what you got.
Plus, if you haven't practiced in over a week and then all of a sudden you play a game,
yeah,
you're a little susceptible to re-injury.
Right. If he can practice, he'll play. And he's got 4 days to get ready.
Yeah.
I don't think that Ed Oliver – and I don't know. They may disagree with me. In my mind, Ed Oliver's not one of those guys. He's not, you know, he's not Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre, you know, Walter Payton kind of guys where they get to say, you know what, I'm gonna take a week off and I'm gonna come back and play Sunday. And they'll say, okay, that's not what's happening here.
Yeah.
I mean, Ed can't practice, and if he's not practicing, it's very unlikely that after 11 days after training camp and this early in the season, all that, they're gonna say you're plug him in and expect him to play well.
Right.
I think they'll believe Brandon Bryant or Shaq Lawson or DaQuan Jones, and those guys will be better now. Tim, and I'll say this too, that has nothing to do with Tim Settle's injury. They both get treated the same way.
Yeah.
The rest of those guys in the room are going to get opportunities and have added responsibilities because of those injuries. That's just the way it is. You don't play Tim Settle halfway just because Ed Oliver's out. You treat Tim Settle as his own thing. Is he ready to play? Should
different.
He play? And then he's out. And if Ed Oliver is the same way, they're both out. That's the way it works. So – if they can, they'll practice and they'll play. If they don't, it's opportunities and expectations for guys who are, believe me, sitting there waiting just for that.
Right. We step aside here, but when we come back, some players have come off the practice field. They are addressing the media. We're going to bring Dawson Knox your way next when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Chasker with you. Players are off the practice field. They are addressing the media. We are going to bring you there now. Here is Dawson Knox answering questions.
When Josh is getting the ball out quickly and as decisively as he is, I mean, what kind of a weapon is that? And kind of the next evolution of him, just such command there.
Yeah, it just shows that, I mean, he's on top of everything, you know. Especially in practice when you got that guy rushing you, it kind of speeds everything up. But it just shows you how well he's going to know this offense. You know, with Coach Dorsey being here for so long now, his brain's just firing on all cylinders. And when he plays like that, I mean, it's going to be hard to stop. We believe he's the best player in the league, and every time he suits up for us, we got a chance to beat anybody.
Tell that he's able to read defenses better, just, you know, with his eyes or being able to shift to safety or anything.
I think one of the biggest steps we've seen is just how he goes through the progression quickly too. Like, he can get all the way to his fifth read, you know, within seconds, which is insane. To deal with what he has to deal with, seeing defenses, diagnosing it, knowing when he's hot off blitzes, and then being able to go through his progression and get all the way down to the check down. That's been what's most impressive so far, but especially when he knows exactly where he wants to go with the ball, he's lethal. I mean, he's looking off safeties because he knows he's throwing over this way. It's almost like a video game to him now. It's impressive.
Back-to-back primetime games, do you sense an extra feel of excitement just being able to get back on a big stage again?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think everybody on this team loves primetime games, just knowing that all eyes are on us, especially being the home opener back in Buffalo, Monday Night Lights. I mean, it's going to be an environment unlike anything we've seen here so far, because we know these fans are incredible. We know it's going to be packed. The energy is going to be off the charts, so we're really excited for it.
A Titans team that's almost become like division rivals for you guys. You play them every year, it seems like, and had your number the last couple of years. How do you feel about facing a team that when you kind of got to get over that hump?
Yeah, I think it's always going to be in the back of your mind how the last year or two have gone with that opponent. You know, there's a little extra chip on our shoulder. They finished first in the AFC last year, so we have all the respect for them as a team. They're really good at what they do. So I know we're going to have a challenge coming into this one. And we're looking forward to kind of getting some of that bad taste out of our mouths from last year. And especially me personally, it's the hometown team. And I didn't even get to finish last year's game because of the broken hand. So definitely itching to get back out for this one.
Did you watch a lot of Titans football when you were growing up? Did you root for them?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I grew up Eddie George, you know, Steve McNair. Blaine Bishop was one of my favorites. Frank Wycheck at tight end. I was just naturally a Titans fan because I'm from Nashville. They were the hometown team. But now it's, you know, my rookie year, we got to go into Nashville and beat them, and that was an incredible feeling. The last 2 years, they've had our number, so we have all the respect for them, but we're really looking forward to the challenge.
You also had that tight end end around that got called back and a touchdown on. Go to Dorsey and say, give me that thing again. I want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to, I can tell you our game plan, but no, yeah, definitely want that one back.
You describe your progress as a blocker and be more sufficient there.
Yeah, it's definitely something I've wanted to work on. I want to be the type of tight end that never has to come off the field, whether it's a run situation, pass protection, or running routes. So it's definitely been an area of my game I've worked on. Started to get a little more comfortable in the system with it.
So that's Dawson Knox addressing the media after practice today. Interesting thing about Knox, Steve, you know, he comes off a career high season in catches, yards, and touchdowns. He's second on the team behind Diggs last year with 9 touchdowns. Diggs had 10. Week 1, 2 targets. And I realize you got to spread the ball around. I mean, Josh, to his credit, I think he hit 8 different players in the passing game through the course of the week one game against the Rams. But I think a lot of people were expecting more action for Dawson Knox. And I realize sometimes it's just the way the game goes. Do we make anything of that, or is that just a one game thing? Or?
I'd say not yet.
Yeah.
And that doesn't, you know, so that says it all. Maybe if it continues through 3 games or 4 games, yeah, maybe. But it is what it is on opening day. Nobody knows anything, and the game unfolds without any knowledge. So there is no way to game plan or have a game plan ready that says Dawson Knox is going to be the centerpiece, because that's what they're going to give us. On Thursday night, last Thursday night, he, you know, they had other matchups they liked, and they were really successful doing it. And if not for one interceptions on Josh, one's on Isaiah McKenzie, and then you have 2 fumbles, and all of those in the first half. That changes the game a little bit. But they were manhandling the Rams, off, you know, as an offense all night. And, you know, maybe there was a conversation that says, you know what, we're going to save Dawson for another week. We're not going to use it. We're not going to do that because we don't need it. You know? They never got that to that.
Now, must be nice.
Yeah, well, certainly he's not going to be the number one option coming out of the gate like a Kittle or a Kelce or those guys. But he is on the list. And if there comes a game when they get down there and they say, you know what, they've got this, let's try this with the tight end a little bit. You know, then you get in, and then he gets in there and he starts getting some opportunities. But, like I said, nothing to be worried about if you're Dawson Knox or his fans. Just give it a minute.
Yeah, it was only one game. It was just curious seeing that, that's all. Because he was a pretty prominent part of the passing game as the year went on last year. And they had, they had veteran players like Crowder in this offense last year with Beasley and Emmanuel Sanders. And somehow Josh found Dawson an awful lot, particularly in the red zone, which is one of the main reasons why he had 9 touchdowns. So, yeah, we'll see how it plays out in the coming weeks. I don't think we'd call it a trend yet for sure. It's maybe just a one-off, but we'll know more come Monday night. Time for us to turn to another player addressing the media here this afternoon. He had a pretty good performance in week one, especially against the run, crashing down inside and helping out on some of those between-the-tackles runs. Here is Bills defensive end Greg Rousseau.
Talk about a little bit from your perspective, the impact that Vaughn has been able to make so far in the short period of time that he's been here.
I'd say Vaughn's been great. You know, just the energy that he's brought to our room, the experience. I mean, there's nothing like it. So to be able to have him in our room, it's been a blessing. And we're going to keep on building on last week.
How fun was it just to be able to have the whole, you know, defensive line package out there, being able to play a game with the addition of Vaughn?
Yeah, I mean, it was great. You know, the whole camp, we were having some real solid days where we were just going against each other. So it was great to finally get out there and compete against another team, especially on a big-time stage like last Thursday. So, I mean, having Vaughn out there, it's different. You know, it's just a different – it's a whole different animal than – it's a whole different animal when you got when you got a game plan for a guy like Vaughn and then game plan for Ed. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy.
What have you learned differently about year one to year two? Mm-hmm. You know, you've been able to kind of look back and say, you know what, kind of learn how to manage this or do this differently about yourself, going about as a pro, whatever.
I feel like with every single game you play, like you learn something here, you learn something there, whether it's good or bad, you learn from pretty much every situation. So I feel like the more reps under my belt, I feel like I grow as a player. And I know everybody in the whole entire room has that same mindset of just whenever you're out there, you're getting better, you're learning. Even if somebody else makes a mistake or does something good, I'm still looking at that and seeing how I can incorporate it into my game.
How do you view the challenge of facing Derrick Henry and what do you have to do to try to slow him down?
Coach Frazier talks about it in every meeting. Stop the run comes first. You know, you got to put teams like those behind the sticks and be able to make them one-dimensional. So stopping Derrick Henry, obviously a challenge, but we're definitely up for it and we're excited for it.
Is there maybe a little extra excitement this week, just knowing it's the home opener and it's in prime time?
Yeah, Monday Night Football, it doesn't get any better than that. So, I mean, we're ready to go out there and play in front of our amazing fans, and I feel like the atmosphere is going to be great.
Watch Monday Night Football growing up. You remember watching it?
Yeah, all the time. I just remember it was always a big deal because on Sundays you got all the games, but on Monday usually it's only just one game. You know, and everybody is looking forward to it that day. Like even when you're in school, people are talking about it. So I remember, yeah.
All right, so that's Greg Rousseau addressing the media here after practice today, and he has been a beneficiary of Von Miller's influence, not just because he draws a lot of attention on his side of the formation, giving Greg Rousseau more one-on-one opportunities, but just with the tutoring that he gets from Von in the practice setting. We see it all the time. And I don't know if anybody had an opportunity, most of you did based on the numbers we saw, to watch the Von Miller Mic'd Up segment that BuffaloBills.com had up on the website, because we did have him mic'd up for last week's game. But there's a portion there on the sidelines where right before the defense is going back out on the field that he's telling Greg Rousseau, time for you to go get it. Be confident and go get it. He's telling him he believes in him. You got Von Miller telling you.
Yeah, he's telling him to take over. Yeah, it's just take over.
I mean, when you're a second-year player and you got Von Miller, the best pass rusher of a generation, telling you to go take over, I got to imagine that the amount of confidence that gives you is through the roof.
Yeah, there's no question. It's part of building a team. Von Miller's a really good guy, knows how to do it, has seen it done and done it a number of times. He's good at it. That's why he's a leader. That's why he's a great player. That's why he's a great addition to any team. He elevates guys like Greg Rousseau and Boogie Basham and A.J. Epinesa and Ed Oliver. I heard on the mic'd up, he said the same thing to Ed Oliver. He says, you've got to go in. Ed, go in and take over. You know, that's the kind of mentality he wants these guys to have. Each one of them wants to take over the game. When you got four or five guys trying to take the game over and they're all gifted, yeah, that's a tough out for a team to get over on, right? So, yeah, Vaughn being the kind of guy he is, you can see why. He's a great player. You know, he's a Hall of Fame caliber player. That's why he's got triple digit sacks in his career and still going. So it's pretty insightful when you see a team come together like this at the level it is with the players they've drafted and how they can continue to elevate their game. And Greg Rousseau's gotten better all the time, but man, you see even more.
He's got the chance to do some damage Monday night because in a hostile environment for the Titans offensive line, he's going to be going against a rookie third round pick in Nicholas Petit-Frere, and he's starting at right tackle there. And look, the kid played at Ohio State. He's played in giant games in front of big crowds, but it's going to be a little different here on Monday night. And so you wonder if that affords Greg Rousseau an extra couple of opportunities to get back there at Tannehill or, you know, knife underneath him and make a tackle for loss, you know, on Derrick Henry if he's getting the ball in the backfield.
Yeah, it is going to be a different atmosphere. It's going to, I mean, most college kids, particularly guys obviously from Power 5 schools or SEC schools, you know, Big 12, Big 10 schools, Pac-12, Big 12, Big 10 schools, they played in front of big crowds. But in Buffalo on a Monday night football game with this kind of team and the expectations attached to it, it becomes intense. The emotion of the crowd is not just – it's more than just cheering and loud noise.
You can feel
it's emotion. Yeah. And there's intent behind it. And you got to get your mind around it. So as a young player, that it means you're going to really – it's not just, you know, trying to get the hang of it. You got to – if you don't have the hang of getting the snap as a right tackle or looking in at the ball without looking at the guy you're actually going to block, if you don't get your mind around that and have techniques and stuff to go to, you're going to get beat a couple of times before you get it. So it's a big deal. And I know we take, you know, Buffalo fans take great pride in it. And we're like, yeah, this is going to be great. It's real.
Yeah.
It's real. There are stadiums around the league, Kansas City, Seattle, Buffalo, Denver. There's some stadiums around that are difficult, and this is one of them.
Break time for us here. When we come back, some final thoughts on Bills Titans, but also some thoughts on tonight's game, Chargers Chiefs. That is a doozy. Will it be a shootout? We'll discuss that next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker. Thursday Night Football, Steve. Chiefs, Chargers.
Boop,
in an AFC West showdown on Amazon Prime. Get your streaming service up and ready.
How about this? I hope this is such an epic battle that neither team is the same afterwards.
Oh, wow. Well, you already know the Chargers are going to be without their top receiver, Keenan Allen. Not that they don't have other guys to throw to. Mike Williams, Josh Palmer, Jalen Guyton. They're going to be without – I don't think they're going to have their tight end either, Parham.
They got some guys.
So it'll be interesting to see what they do. I'm more curious to look at the Chargers' defense because that was their Achilles heel last year. It was the main reason they didn't make the playoffs. Their defense was one of the worst in football. But now they have Derwin James healthy. They have Khalil Mack. There's a chance J.C. Jackson plays tonight after missing last week because he had his ankle scoped during training camp. That's the thing I'm most interested in seeing. What does the Chargers defense look like? Is it so much better that they could really make a run at the playoffs?
Yeah, and they're going against an offense that is humming
a
on all cylinders.
Yeah,
they're juggernauts. Let's see. It is going to be a fun game. I'm going to watch.
I also wouldn't mind seeing the Chiefs defense lay an egg because that would make them a one-phase team, which would make me pretty happy as well. But dare to dream. Sorry.
There's a lot of things. There's a lot of things you'd like to see.
Well, sure. That's one of them. It's on the list. Big Friday show tomorrow. Tailgate Friday.
Let's go.
Friday mailbag. Tasker's teammate and Greg Cosell. We'll see you tomorrow at 1:00.